Welcome to the Health Edge, translating the science of self-care. I am Dr. Mark Pettis. Great to be with you as an eventful 2023 winds down here in late December. I hope everyone had a peaceful, joyous, loving, connected holiday season and looking forward to bringing in what is sure to be another eventful 2024. I would say the most common question that I get asked, and I do a fair amount of public speaking and teaching, has to do with the evolution of this topic of the risk and the benefit of taking statin medications to lower LDL cholesterol and to lower one's cardiovascular risk. And the research does continue to evolve, not in a way that would suggest that LDL is less important, because surely it is. But there, I think there's a bit of a, and I'm rendering some opinion here, but we'll look at some of the more recent research that the stated benefits, the sort of marketed benefits of statins in the magnitude of risk reduction, I believe, is a bit overstated. And let's just go through a recent study that looks at this in what I believe to be excellent methodology and very good detail. And yet arrives at some conclusions that I'm not suggesting should change the way one thinks about their own individualized risk-benefit proposition for taking a statin. But I do think that the data from this study put in, I believe, a bit more accurate context for how clinicians, those prescribing, and patients or those receiving should have the quantification of risk benefit communicated to them. Because what you see, in advertisement and marketing information from pharmaceutical companies will create the perception that, these medications are a gift from above, and there's just it's a no-brainer that you should be considering this, right? So talk to your doctor about this or this. That's the model of care, and there's some value within that model. Please don't get me wrong. But let's look at, I'm going to share my screen and we'll go through this study very briefly. This was recently published, the references below from the Journal of the American Medical Association Internal Medicine. This is a very widely disseminated, peer-reviewed, it considered to be a very reputable a scientific publication. It's one that I have looked at and reviewed for most of my 40-year clinical career. And I should preface, some my comments are really based not just on data like this, but also, I've been a prescriber for many years, and as a nephrologist, certainly many people that I've cared for have needed a great deal of support for cardiovascular risk management. And again, this, as I've shared, touches very close to home. Both my parents died of heart disease, and I, for most of my adult life, have met criteria to be prescribed a statin. And so I, these are very personal as well as I think very germane professional conversations. So this study, a multi-center trial from various countries was titled Evaluating the Association Between Low-Density Lipoprotein Cholesterol Reduction and Relative and absolute effects of statin treatment. And we're going to look at this important difference between relative risk reduction and absolute risk reduction. And it is the latter, absolute risk reduction, that leads to a variable known as number needed to treat. How many people like me or you would need to be treated with this intervention in order to realize the benefit? In much the same way, though this is not data that one sees published quite as visibly, is the number needed to harm. How many people like you or me who are treated with this particular intervention will likely experience some harm or side effect? So this is how this analysis is structured. This was a systematic review and a meta-analysis. So this methodology considered the best in terms of quality, in that the authors here are looking at randomized controlled trials. And most of the trials included in this analysis were randomized controlled placebo trials. So you're comparing a statin with a placebo. And most of these studies were blinded so that the investigators did not know who was getting a statin versus who was getting a placebo. And that's really important. I've talked in other podcasts about the inherent effects that bias can have on outcomes, measurements, interpretation of data. And that's just an inherent part of the sort of how the human mind works. We tend to be a bit more embracing of numbers that support our way of thinking, our hypotheses. Whether or not those interpretations are accurate is can be an issue with the published literature. And so a blinded trial minimizes the kind of bias that might be introduced in the methodology. So this is to say that this is a really excellent methodology in terms of quality of research that was examined. All of the studies looked at individuals at some risk for cardiac disease, and they were either given a statin or they received a placebo. And the authors of this paper were interested in looking at all of those studies that met their criteria and to see just how large the effect was. How big is that risk reduction when you look at treatment of individuals just like you or your loved ones? So let's look a little more closely at this. So again, the authors were interested in the association between statin-induced reduction in low-density lipoprotein cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, and the absolute risk reduction of individual rather than composite outcomes. Many studies lump outcomes, mortality, whether or not you had a heart attack, whether or not you needed an interventional cardiac procedure. And if you had any of those, one or more of those outcomes, you would have been considered, either an adverse outcome, or if you had one of those prevented, a beneficial outcome. Here, the authors were interested in individual effects, all-cause mortality, dying from any cause, having a myocardial infarction or a heart attack, an MI, as we refer to that, or a stroke. And these are the traditional cardiovascular outcomes that one wishes to reduce their risk for by way of assessing the risk benefit of a particular intervention. Initially, they looked at over 290 trials And this is one of the more widely published clinical scenarios of the last 20, 30 years. And ultimately, they came upon 21 studies that met their criteria: randomized, placebo-controlled, mostly blinded. And there were a total of 130,000 patients, individuals, who either were randomized to either receive a statin or a placebo. Seven of these trials were looking at primary prevention. These are individuals who had never had evidence of a prior heart attack or stroke. And the intent of the treatment is to lower the risk of having that first event. And so these are people with one or more risk factors that would include smoking, hypertension, diabetes, or insulin resistant. These are the usual suspects, and then of course high LDL. These trials can't always correct for the number of risk factors, so they call that heterogeneity. Some people may have only had one risk factor, another might have had two or more, and so you're not always comparing apples to apples, and that's an important aspect of this methodology. Six trials were for secondary prevention. These were individuals that had had a history of a prior heart attack or stroke. And not surprisingly, someone who's already had an event is at much greater risk for a secondary event. So the intervention here is to save that life, allow that life to live longer, prevent a second non-fatal heart attack, prevent another stroke or a first stroke in somebody who's had a prior heart attack. And we know that these are devastating end organ complications of cardiovascular disease that continue to be the number one cause of death in the United States and the Western world. So six of these trials were for secondary prevention. The remainder of the 21 trials included both. The average follow-up for these individuals was 4.4 years. Now, you're including 21 trials, so there is some heterogeneity. You're not entirely comparing apples to apples, though the trials are designed to be examining the same basic question of how large is the benefit, and how can that create for the prescriber and for the, I hate to use the word consumer, a more clear and quantifiable, measurable way of whether this is something I should consider or not. That we'll look at that data. So this next graphic is a comparison of relative risk reduction versus absolute risk reduction. This is from the paper, and I wanted to show you this because you can see in the sort of dark blue, black bar here versus the sort of lighter blue gray absolute versus relative risk that these are very different numbers. So if one looks at the relative risk reduction of dying from any cause from these trials, it's, up around 8-9% relative risk reduction. I'm going to come back to why this difference is important. If you look at the absolute risk reduction, it's, as I'll show you the raw numbers, it comes out to be less than 1%. If you look at the similar comparison, looking at the risk of a non-fatal heart attack, you see, almost 30% risk reduction. This is what most trials publish. And this is what, the beautiful color, glossy pharmaceutical ads, and all of the peer-reviewed journals, had these large red numbers, 30% risk reduction of MI. You look at that and you think, holy cow, I mean, that, sign me up for that. You won't see absolute risk reductions being used in marketing, both to physicians as well as to patients. And though a lot of physicians are well aware of these differences, many may not be. And so the framing with which you offer the prescription for a statin may be one that says, one out of three heart attacks prevented. That sounds pretty good to the recipient, but in fact is a gross overestimate of the actual benefit they're getting when you re bring that to the level of absolute risk reduction. And again, I'll just show you the raw numbers in a moment. And then when you look at stroke, again, a relative risk reduction is about 15%, absolute risk being much less than 1%. So if I treat 100 people with a statin and another 100 get placebo, and 10 people on placebo have a heart attack, and 7 people on placebo on the medication have a heart attack, that would be considered a 30% relative risk reduction. The absolute risk reduction in that example would be much smaller, like 3%. You're just subtracting the actual number percent of people who had that adverse outcome. So let's just look at the raw numbers for a second. And again, these were people on average treated for almost 4.5 years. So for primary prevention, to prevent that first heart attack, the number needed to treat to save one life would have been about 167 people. So for that, that one life, that's obviously important. But the majority of people are not going to realize that mortality benefit. If you look at of those treated versus those who got placebo, the number needed to treat to prevent a heart attack in primary prevention, preventing that first event, and this is so important, this is the majority of people who are either prescribed statins or are confronting the risk benefit of whether to do so or not. That number is about 143 to prevent one non-fatal heart attack. For a stroke, that number needed to treat very high, 333. Now, these are aggregate numbers in primary prevention. So these are number needed to treat to prevent an outcome, an adverse outcome as a consequence of taking that intervention. For an individual, let's say you were a diabetic and you had high blood pressure and you were a smoker. Well, no question, your risk reduction might be greater. So these were people that, again, it was a heterogeneous group, but these are just sort of averages for those aggregate being treated. And again, that was about 65,000 people being treated for primary risk reduction. Now, the numbers look a little different, as you might expect. The risk is much higher here. You're trying to prevent that second adverse event. And these are people who've already had a heart attack or a stroke. So to prevent one death, you're looking at a number needed to treat of 111. One death would be prevented. For a non-fatal heart attack, that second heart attack for many, 45 would have to be treated to prevent a second heart attack. And so that, that when you look at the sheer prevalence of people being with the need for secondary risk reduction, that's a very different risk-benefit proposition. It's still, some people are still surprised that the number is still what it is, but it's quite significant nonetheless. And then for a stroke, the number needed to treat, again, in secondary prevention, these are the people at the highest of high risk, would be 143 to prevent one stroke. Now, if you look at the, this is more historical data. That's not really what the study that I'm reviewing with you was intended to look at, but these are just sort of accepted data that has been published, and it is important. Most of these trials, almost all of the trials that I'm sharing with you from this review, were sponsored by Big Pharma. And there's some interesting evidence that a pharmaceutical company sponsored trial will have results more favorable with respect to the pharmacologic they're studying than a trial looking at a similar intervention that's not sponsored by a pharmacologic company. Go figure. So most of these studies are in fact funded by Big Pharma. And that always raises questions about the data, what you're seeing, what gets presented, what gets sort of pushed aside. And there's no shortage of precedent for that in much of the published literature. But when you look at number needed to harm, which most pharmaceutical companies aren't going to be sort of anxious to share, and there's a lot of debate about statins, are the harms overstated? In my opinion, I think they're underreported. Many, many people will have side effects that make their long-term tolerance of statins challenging. And then there are the metabolic effects. So just in general, and this is data that tends to be lumped for both primary and secondary prevention, the number needed to harm, how many people taking a statin for, a study like this might be harmed. The ballpark figure would be that the number needed to harm would be about 50 individuals where one would develop diabetes or insulin resistance, which is probably the biggest driver, in my opinion, of cardiovascular disease, much more so than an elevated LDL cholesterol. And then, if you look at the number needed to harm in terms of myalgias, that muscle achiness, that number is about 10. It's a pretty low number. So for some people, when you look at particularly primary prevention, the number needed to treat for benefit is much greater than the number needed to treat for some level of harm. Now, this harm may not be life-threatening. It may be even not that significant for the individual with it. But if you're developing insulin resistance, that's a big deal. And so this is just a better way, in my view, of communicating the magnitude of effect, both risk and benefit, of clinical interventional trials like this. So the authors essentially conclude, and I'll just read this for you. The results of this meta-analysis suggest that the absolute risk reductions of treatment with statins in terms of all-cause mortality, myocardial infarction, and stroke are modest compared with the relative risk reductions. And the presence of significant heterogeneity reduces the certainty of the evidence. So keep that in mind. We're not comparing apples to apples. Necessarily, but just you're getting some good ballpark, good quality comparison here. A conclusive association between absolute reductions in LDL cholesterol and individual clinical outcomes was not established. And these findings underscore the importance of discussing absolute risk reductions when making informed clinical decisions with individual patients. That's an important message to the prescribing physician. These are usually primary care providers, internists, family practitioners, and cardiologists, those that are obviously seeing higher risk individuals with cardiovascular disease. So the points that I wanted to emphasize were essentially that there's a big difference between primary risk reduction and secondary risk reduction in terms of the magnitude of the absolute risk reduction or the number needed to treat to prevent an event compared to primary reduction, risk reduction. And so I'm not suggesting that people who are currently taking a statin should in any way stop them. That is not a wise thing to do. And definitely, you would want to discuss that with your prescribing caregiver before making that decision. LDL cholesterol is falling out of favor as the lipid value that can most accurately predict cardiovascular risk. And it's widely accepted today that ApoB, apolipoprotein B, this is a blood test, ApoB is a more accurate predictor of cardiovascular risk than the LDL and the total cholesterol that most physicians have been looking at for the last generation on a standard lipid profile. ApoB is a measure of the smaller, dense, low-density lipoprotein particles. It's the number of those small, dense lipoprotein particles that most strongly predicts cardiovascular risk. And that was not examined in these studies. ApoB is a more recent recognized lipid biomarker for cardiovascular disease. And I'm not questioning that having a lower ApoB is not a good thing. There are some people who would want to leverage any opportunity to get that ApoB as low as possible in an effort to reduce their longer-term risk of a cardiovascular event. And whether that's with statins, whether that is with a medication that would, Zetia is a medication that blocks absorption of cholesterol that is consumed. And then many of you are familiar with the PCSK9 inhibitors that can help the liver remove more ApoB or LDL from the circulation to lower those levels. So there are multiple strategies. And then, of course, I talk a lot about lifestyle strategies, which, the bullseye on the target, in my view, for reducing ApoB through lifestyle nutritionally would be to limit refined carbohydrates, sugar. You want to lower insulin levels. You want to very much lower any risk of insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance. I believe that probably has the largest magnitude of risk reduction. That's my opinion. Also, significantly reduces the risk of most chronic complex diseases. That's just globally important. Many of the lifestyle interventions that I talk about all the time, from light blue light mitigation and circadian entrainment strategies to regular movement, particularly with occasional higher intensity activity, loving, nurturing relationships, letting go of those relationships that might be more toxic, letting go of that employment, easier said than done, right? But these are real life situations that can ruin lives. And so there are so many aspects to lowering cardiovascular risk independent of statins. And I respect a lot of the folks out there that know a lot about lipids and talk a lot about this. But for me personally, The distinction between primary prevention and secondary prevention is an important one. Both my parents died of cardiovascular disease. They were also smokers, and I think one of the reason that mortality rates have been better with cardiovascular disease has had more to do with smoking cessation over the last generation than the advent of statins. So statins have a value. I think that just understanding the importance of absolute risk reduction and how that helps you determine the magnitude of that value versus risk is really important. And I hope this information was helpful to you. I hope you have an awesome new year. Stay well and stay safe. And I look forward to sharing more content with you in 2024. Take care. Peace.